Blog Talk Radio. Firefly Willows LIVE presents The Amethyst Oracle, Divination with a Queer Twist, featuring your hosts, Heisey Lutmers and Charlie Harrington.
The Amethyst Oracle.
Delve into life, death, and everything betwixt, between, and beyond.
Between and beyond.
Between and beyond.
With a queer twist.
The Amethyst Oracle. Divination with a queer twist. And now, here are your hosts, Charlie Harrington and Heisey Lutmers.
And hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us on this lovely May evening. Hopefully, wherever you are, the weather is just as nice as it is here. We're just waiting momentarily for Charlie to be able to Skype into the show. So while he does that, I will just remind you that you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/theamethystoracle. And we encourage you to go to the page, leave questions, comments, suggestions for the show. Feel free to continue the conversation about something that we might bring up in the show. If there are different things that we pull cards for, we'd love to hear what cards might come up for you or whatever divination tool you might use, so that you can also contribute to that conversation even after the show on the Facebook page. Just say, here's what I asked for that question. Here's what card or whatever came up, and here are my thoughts on that. So we would encourage you to engage with us there on Facebook. And I am joined here by my co-host, Charlie. Hello,
hi,
Charlie.
There. How's it going?
It is going well.
Right on.
And I think that we're going to have a very both interesting and fun show tonight.
More interesting or more fun?
Well, I think that much of the topic of what we'll be talking about can be both interesting and fun, and it's more interesting the more fun you make it. Do you want to give them a little tease about our guest this evening?
I would never tease our guest. I respect Ava far too much.
But see, that's where the interesting and fun part comes in. For the rest of the show, is a bit of a tease is always kind of fun.
Yes. No, she's a luscious, lively lady, and she has lots to say and share with us. I'm very excited about what she has to say about trusting your own intuitive process and moving beyond the props. So I give her props for that.
And I also really enjoy that she has been, since like the 70s, very involved in the dance world. And I think that that's also something that's very interesting, and I bring that up because in a moment we're going to hear a poem by her. She's also a poetry writer that is a bit focused on dance in a sense. That was kind of the genesis of that poem. And some of the things that she had to say about dance I also found very interesting when we were chatting with her the other day. Now, do you want to also perhaps tease the audience with what might be fun and interesting for the rest of the show?
Well, I may just do that. I just may. You see what I did there?
I see what you're doing.
Well, I see. May has many associations, of course, through time and space. People think of May Day and the giving people flowers, May poles, May flowers that came from April showers. But we're queers here at the Amethyst Oracle, so we think of Camelot's lusty month of May.
Well,
that's the most natural association I can think of.
That's right. You might be queer and think of Camelot. Personally, I'm queer, and what do I always think about? Sex.
Oh, there you go. That's so you. So in the gutter. I'm talking about show tunes.
Well, that's a whole different breed of queer. You know, I'm a queer of the Grindr generation.
That's true.
You apparently are a queer of the Broadway show tune generation. And we're going to be taking a little peek into Asking the Tarot. What is the key to amazing sex?
Amazing sex.
Well, who doesn't want to know that? Some people think they already do, and they need to be told that there's other keys that fit different locks.
They're magic. You'll see. We'll see.
Of course, in the latter part of the show, we will be offering the opportunity for people to get readings live right here on the air with us. Mm-hmm. And if people want to do that, they can either Skype in from the show page or you can call in at 646-716-5510. So I think perhaps, I was also going to mention that for our little What's the Key to Amazing Sex segment, we're going to have a couple of sound bites to play during the show, as well as there's a couple of people that sent in their comments on our Facebook page, which just goes back to what I was saying at the beginning, encouraging people to interact with us because they might hear what they have to say right here on the show.
We desperately need your attention.
Well.
your feedback.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if that desperation for attention is a good key to amazing sex.
Oh, I'd say yes.
Well, maybe for the person who's getting the attention. But is it really amazing for the person who's having the lavish?
I pulled a card asking just that. Is desperate need for attention a key to amazing sex? And I got the Knight of Rods.
Oh, well.
And yes, it's that desperation becomes a fire, a consuming passion. And, we usually think of desperation, especially when you're advising a client about love. When desperation comes up, it's usually a bad thing, and we steer away from it. But in regard to what it does for sex, there's nothing worse than ambivalence, really. So that desperation, maybe not conducive to a lasting romantic relationship, you know, could be great for sex. And as Dan Savage, our fellow podcaster, often says, you know, psychos, be crazy, good in bed.
But I think the Knight of Rods also reminds us that while that desperation may lead to an amazing night of sex, it also is very fleeting. And mm-hmm. that desperation and that attention is not going to be something that serves for a long-term kind of relationship, but it's going to kind of consume it and cause it to burn out very quickly.
You promised you wouldn't bring up Fleet Week again.
Well, I was trying to be subtle, but, you know, sometimes you just have to live with the transgressions that you commit in life. They come back to haunt you at the oddest of times.
Yeah. Alrighty.
So
ooh.
I think perhaps before we jump into sex, before we get it on with the topic of sex,
yeah.
Why don't we hear a little poem by Ava, our guest. And this is just to let people have a little sampling of who she is, and hopefully will then intrigue them to want to stick around and hear our conversation with her a little bit later. How does that sound to you?
That sounds delicious.
Excellent. So enjoy this reading by, and I'm going to leave it to you to say her name.
Ava Yacentois.
Ava Yacentois, this is a reading of her own poem, What Makes a Dance.
The way you make a dance is to lay your back against the earth.
Lay your back against the earth.
Slip low into the soil of the earth.
Slip low into the soil of the earth.
To touch your shoulder.
Touch your shoulder.
To the shoulder of the one you find there. The current of that discovered shoulder, creating a current flowing backwards in time, forwards in time,
backwards and
backwards
time,
and back,
time,
forward,
back,
forward,
back,
forward,
back,
forward, flowing backwards in time, forwards in time. The discoverable shoulder uniting you through land masses and the pulse of distant ocean and the pulse of distant ocean. Shoulders of the dead, of the dying. Shoulders, hip joints of the tortured and shot, manacled and sold. The way you make a dance is to catch the spaces a partner leaves in the air.
Catch the spaces a partner leaves in the air.
To hold these spaces against your ear. To drink them down and down until you comprehend another being in this world. The way you make a dance is to unlatch the gate and run free.
Unlatch the gate and run free.
On a night of no moon. And to let voices and the inclination of your own blood move you over that route. There is a right way to make a dance, and someone's shoulder touching yours has that direction. Someone's shoulder touching yours cups that story, offers it. The way you make a dance is to plant your heels and toes along the fault line.
Plant your heels and toes along the fault line.
Feel, in its tremors, the end of time and the birth of everything. The birth of everything. Of everything. Of everything. Of everything. Of everything.
And there you have it, Charlie.
The birth of everything.
Of everything.
Everything. I thought that was beautiful. I thought that was sexy, and I almost used the word poetic, and I realized how silly that sounded. But it was wonderful, and I could sort of see a reading in it. And I was trying to giving it a bit of tarot imagery to some of the cards, mainly the wand suit, but also the idea of the Empress came to me through that, and her ability to be creative.
Yes. Well, and it's a very, to me, it was a very Pentacles kind of poem, because it's all about, you know, touching the earth, and then it's like shoulder to shoulder and these things that are coming out of your body and all of that. So that was kind of what it was very earthy to me, when I heard her reading it. So hopefully she will be pleased with the treatment that was given to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to, and I think something you said actually is also something that she talks about very much, in our conversation with her, because, she is very much works with and is very focused on symbolism. And I think you finding a reading in that poem is similar to what it is that really draws her to tarot and to different things, with that love of symbolism. So hopefully people will stay tuned for that, because she's going to speak quite a bit about symbolism. Now, we move on to that subject of May.
You're talking about sex again, aren't you?
Well, sometimes I wonder when I'm not. You know,
I wonder that. The listeners, if there are any, wonder that.
I might say I want Indian food for dinner, and for some reason, people seem to think that that is a euphemism for I don't know what. Spicy
ball joke in there, and I just don't know what it would be.
For a spicy evening.
So one thing I want to say about this technique, we've used it before, and I just want to remind for the listeners, like who wonder, are we just being prurient? Is it why are we always talking so much about sex? It's really the wisdom reading technique that I first encountered with Rachel Pollack, where you ask the bigger questions of the cards. And, you know, she did things such as, like, what is the soul? How did God create the universe? These sort of big questions with the tarot, not in an investigative way to arrive at a sort of literally true answer, but to sort of explore that idea. And I think that sometimes tarot practitioners are very nervous about talking about sex. And so this is a fun way to combine wisdom readings with sex. And
well, yes. And it also, you know, what you're saying here ties in my, I have another show on the second Sunday. So this past Sunday, I had my show Revolution. And my guest on there was Divine Kika, who is a love and relationship coach, but she primarily teaches tantric workshops and classes. And, you know, she was talking about how the energy of sex, the sexual energy within us is kind of that primal core energy that we operate from. It's the seed of the Kundalini. It's the energy of creativity. So, you know, talking about sex isn't just, like you said, a prurient thing where we're talking about it just to be titillating.
But, oh, it works.
I know. But you know, it's really to probe that energy a little more deeply. And but it really is to kind of connect with that deeper aspect of what sex and sexuality is, which ultimately is that energy that connects us to another or more than one others, you know, in a moment. And to me, that's whether you're in a physical encounter of some sort or whether you're passing somebody on the street, you know, and having that because we also in the round table in that show, we talked about sex and intimacy. And it was interesting how people in the round table even were uncomfortable or had like their, as one person said, their walls went up when we started talking about this topic. And the more I think we talk about it and the more we can be comfortable with it, then the better we can be in our own relationships because we're comfortable talking about what it is that we want or need and asking somebody else what they want or need from us rather than feeling embarrassed or shamed or guilty or whatever that seems to always crop up around the topic of sex. Mm-hmm. So hopefully us bringing it up every once in a while and, you know, and maybe you can explain that we're also bringing it up around times that are more, it relates more naturally to the cycle of the season.
It's spring,
we're not y'all. We're not just bringing it up randomly. Well, but there's a lot of tradition, like around the month of May, for it to be a very kind of passionate, sexual, fiery time. Do you want to say what some of those traditions are?
Well, I mean, I personally am Wiccan. So for me, we started talking about it way back around Imbolc, you know, which is the early spring in the Celtic wheel of the year. And we've moved to Beltane, which people know of as a pretty sexy holiday and connected with fire and fertility rites.
And so, they might know it as May Day because it's
May Day. May Day. Yes,
which actually technically in the seasonal cycle is the beginning of summer.
Mm-hmm, it is.
So we have that kind of building fire and heat, which is why, and I bet if people really pay attention to themselves and pay attention to what's going on around them right now, they probably find that they're feeling a bit more restless, a bit more passionate, a bit more horny. But it just seems to kind of get stimulated around this time of year, and that's part of the natural cycle of things. And so, you know, us talking about it, we do try to do it around times where it's more attuned to what's happening on the natural cycle, not just for the sake of talking about sex.
I still hope we're talking about it in autumn, though.
Well, we will be, but we'll talk about it in a different
quality of sex. Right now, this is the lusty month of May.
Well, that is true.
It's here, that shocking time of year when tons of wicked little thoughts
For you. I knew you were a show tune kind of person.
I had no idea your singing voice was so melodic. That was sorry.
Well, and I was just, and you know, everything that might be dirty, mm-hmm. it just sounds more sexy and proper when you roll the R's.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, so don't just do something wretched. Do something wretched.
Yeah, that was the lovely Vanessa Redgrave from Camelot. And what I find interesting, just for the Arthurian buffs, if that seems a little out of place, one of my favorite parts of Le Morte d'Arthur, written in the 1200s?
Long time ago.
Late medieval period. he has a scene with her and Guinevere and Lancelot, and he talks about how the sex between them was... it was a more savage time. It was this other world, you know, back then. And we just don't do things like that. And people don't behave like that anymore. And it's this great little medievalist sort of, you know, prudish moment. But he's really enjoying himself. So I like that, you know, people don't boink like they did in Camelot. But that has nothing to do with divination. So let's talk about the readings people did about the topic.
Ah, yes. And we're also going to each pull a card as well, asking that question, what's the key to amazing sex? And we had posted on our Facebook to ask people if they wanted to pull either a tarot card or from whatever tool or oracle or divination source that they happen to tap into, that they would be welcome to share that on our Facebook page. And a couple of people did. So one person, their name is Sha Ren. That's all I know. I can't speak as to what that name means or where it comes from, but there you are. Sha Ren. And what they write is, the key to amazing sex is not rushing, but to do it with a patient determination, where both partners have a joyous attitude and altitude. This sounds like an exciting person to do
the
things.
That's the Mile High Club.
I guess so. So with a joyous attitude and altitude in the mutual achievement of a blissful joining and the relaxing aftermath followed by much cuddling.
Okay.
A mini epic that can be regularly repeated till death do us part.
Ooh.
Well, that was quite grand.
That was a wisdom reading if I ever heard one.
And that would be very tantric.
Yes.
Because that's the kind of thing that Tantra is really geared towards, is this going beyond experience and connecting at this deeper level. And it's like this thing, you know. Actually, you know what that woman told me, my guest on Sunday?
What's that?
She said that a woman can have up to 40 orgasms in one session.
Holy matrimony. 40?
Like, woo, okay.
Ooh, time. Well, well done, ladies. Well done. We should have asked Ava about that.
But then Tantra also brings in that idea of extending the orgasm, and that orgasm doesn't equal ejaculation. And so you can have orgasms that are full body. You can have orgasms that kind of come in waves. So it kind of lasts and lasts both for men and for women. And that seems much more akin to what Sha Ren here is describing in terms of amazing sex. Mm-hmm. Apparently for Sha Ren, it's probably a tantric kind of experience.
Very nice. Now, Normandy Ellis also answered it. She said, I'll try to roll my R's. Okay.
Yes.
Lo, the Eight of Wands reversed. I'm thinking of the Pointer Sisters. Slow hand. So she pulled in the reversals there. Normally that Eight of Wands is go, 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 go. But when it's reversed and you block that energy, you can have a nice soothing session.
Well, you know, it's not so much blocking the energy as it is. It's funny. I'm going to keep coming back to this person because we were talking all about this in my, with that woman who does Tantra, Divine Kika. But it's not blocking the energy so much as it's breathing through the energy in order to maintain the kind of, think of the tides going out, to kind of bring it up to a peak and then let it go a little bit to release some of the pressure, and then bring it back up to the peak again, and then release some of the pressure, and then bring it back up again. And that to me is kind of that reversal of the Eight of Wands. Because you kind of have not so much like, let's just get to the goal. Let's get to the end point and, you know, get off versus let's
attaboy.
Let's take our time getting there. But that doesn't lessen the intensity. It can actually heighten the intensity. But it also means that we go all night rather than 10 minutes.
Well.
And I think that that's, isn't that really one of the keys to amazing sex versus just sex? Mm. Sex, you get in, you get out. Well, you get in, you get off, you get out. Whereas amazing sex is those, when you remember those times when it was like, you know, it took your breath away, or you just kind of lost yourself, or, you know, 4 hours went by before you even realized how much time had passed, or, you know, whatever. And that, I think, is much more of amazing sex and would be relevant to what the Eight of Wands reversed would be indicating.
Now, had that Eight of Wands not been reversed, I think that you could suggest that they join Sha Ren in the Mile High Club at those higher altitudes and see what happens to you physically when your body is experiencing being that far from the Earth's core.
Yeah, well, yes. And I would encourage the Eight of Wands maybe to, you know, have sex on fast-moving vehicles. So go have sex on a plane.
You're not driving.
Go have sex on a train and go have sex. Yes. Well, go have sex on a jet ski.
A jet watch out the dog. Okay.
Or have sex on a motorcycle. You know the image of Yab Yum in Buddhism?
Tell me.
Yab Yum, a lot of people know the image, they just don't know what it's called. But it's a guy sitting in lotus with his legs crossed in lotus position, and then there's another figure in front with kind of their head thrown back and they're sitting on top of them.
Oh.
It represents divine union, but it would be the perfect thing for somebody to do on a motorcycle, because you could have the person sitting there driving while the other person sits in front of them facing them and they're having sex, and the other person just has to look over their shoulder, I suppose, to drive. But, you know, you get the rumble of the motorcycle and the speed and everything. Woo, okay.
Oh, to be the highway patrol in your neighborhood. Let's. What else did we get on this topic?
Speaking of Divine Kika that I interviewed, I actually took an opportunity to ask her what her thought was on the key to amazing sex, which obviously is going to come from her tantric approach. So, would you like to hear what she had to say?
I would.
All right. Then I'm going to let you.
All right.
What is the key for amazing sex? The key to amazing sex at first is one, know your body. To be with your body, feel the sensations through your body, be with your breath, spread your sexual energy, your sensual energy throughout your entire body. Allow yourself to feel your partner, connect deeply with her or him, be fully present. Woman, remember to exhale. Most women lose their orgasm because they forget to exhale. Surrender fully into the sensations of your body. Create magic. Sex can be magical, loving, allowing yourself to loosen up completely, letting go of any inhibitions or desires to look good or do it right. Surrender in the magic of the moment. Let yourself make sounds. That comes deeply from your soul, that allow your partner to deeply see and feel who you are, where you both are able to expand in love. Bring your spiritual connection mixed with the infinite physical pleasure that does not have to begin or end, but it's a dance of infinite love. Tantric sex can be healing, transformation, and transcend all that is. It's a way for you to, as a human being, to tap into our true essence, to connect with our soul purpose, to bring you to an alignment and expand and energize with personal healing. Open and charge every cell of your body and honor the temple of your soul, that is your body, that's so deeply that you're truly awakened. So for me, that's amazing sex.
And there you are.
Well, there we are.
I have one thing to say to that.
Woo!
Woo!
I agree with her. Yeah. She didn't even need to pull the tarot card. She just knew.
That's right. You know, she just let that wisdom flow through her in waves. She just took it in and exhaled it out.
Boom. Well, how about, did you pull a card?
I did.
What'd you get?
Well, it's a very interesting card to get.
Oh.
And you know me, I will always just trust the tarot to give me whatever shows up. I'm not
You'll
going
trust
to try
anybody.
To... Well.
With a candy bar.
At least for 10 minutes.
There we go.
So the key to amazing sex is the Eight of Swords.
Ooh.
Isn't that interesting?
50 Shades of Tarot right there.
That is true, huh? It would be very much appropriate for that. Uh-huh. And, you know, first I was struck by the fact that another eight came up. So Normandy Ellis, her card was an eight, the Eight of Wands reversed. Here it's the Eight of Swords. And, you know, for me, one of the aspects of the number eight is internal foundation, but it's this idea that the internal and the external are in alignment with each other and reflect each other, so that who I am internally is how I act in the world, or what I'm surrounded by in the world is a reflection of who I am. And that, to me, would say that amazing sex comes when we are able to mirror and reflect back to the person that we are with, or the people that we are with, rather than closing off or trying to simply be what we think they want us to be, or only looking to or expecting them to be what we need them to be, but to be able to reflect. And there you could be like, you know, looking in each other's eyes so that you reflect each other and you see deeper into each other in order to connect at a deeper level and then be able to satisfy each other more deeply than just on the surface level.
Mm.
Of course, Eight of Swords is often known as the card of the victim,
mm-hmm.
You know, but it's often also a card that's associated with things like guilt or shame or blame. Yeah. And so this, I think, is more a card that may be indicating when we can let go of feeling any sort of guilt or shame around sex, which means being able to talk about it with somebody else, which really goes to being able to ask for and express what it is that we want or need or desire, as well as being able to both ask someone else what they want or need and do it without judgment, so that no matter what they say, we don't suddenly cringe or say things like, oh my God, that's weird. You know, oh, I could never do that.
What in the where now?
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I think of the Eight of Swords. I have a, whenever that comes up in a reading, one of my sort of key phrases that I go to is, no one is coming to save you with the Eight of Swords. And in a sexual context, that's like, you're also responsible for your own experience, you know. And just, it's important to be able, you know, to be able to get yourself home if you need to.
In the end. And, you know, and like you, sometimes you'll hear people complain that the other person finished and then just kind of, that was the end. And
that
so,
was it.
You know, I never got to, but I would challenge a lot of those people and ask them, did you tell the other person that you wanted to continue? Did you tell them what it is that might make you feel good? Did you ask if they would help you to get off, even if you had to do it for yourself, but maybe they could be, you know, caressing your thigh while you did it or whatever it is that you might like to have done. But I think it comes back to that guilt or that shame. People won't ask because they feel uncomfortable. They feel embarrassed. They feel different things. And this is really trying to, you know, one thing I often think of with the Eight of Swords is it's about finding all of the external reasons, people, and things that I can blame for something rather than having to take responsibility for it myself.
Absolutely.
So amazing sex is going to come when you take responsibility, just like you were saying, for making it an amazing experience for yourself and for the other person rather than relying on or expecting the other person to somehow make it amazing for you.
And, you know, it's funny, I pulled a card as well, and I normally would have thought of it as the opposite of the Eight of Swords. I got the Emperor, and normally, when, you know, if I was giving some advice about sex, I wouldn't necessarily go to an Emperor kind of mindset, but since Tarot is telling me to go there, it's take power and take charge of the experience, including if you're in some kind of submissive act. Be in charge of being in that experience. There's being thoughtful and caring about everyone else's experience in the room. that can be admirable, but can also lead to two people going, what do you want? Oh, no, what do you want? What would you like? What's your fantasy? Like, the Emperor, someone has to be in charge, and it might as well be you. You know, so absolutely be willing to lay claim to the things that you want and to speak them. I think often of the Emperor as the lawgiver card. And, you know, so it's set up some rules. Like, I don't like my hair being pulled. All right, you know, like, whatever it is, you know, be in charge. Let that person know. Because there's nothing worse than, you know, the next day you're talking and you tell them, well, I really didn't care for you pulling my hair. Like, well, now they feel bad and there's nothing that can be done, right? So
right.
In that space, in that time, be the Emperor, you know, have authority over yourself, have authority over your own body. And also the Emperor, be willing to say no. There's so many times in our lives, I think we've been raised to be polite or to go along with things, or not to make waves. And the Emperor, you know, has no problem saying, just no. No, not now, not this. Stop. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So.
And I also think it's kind of interesting how that card relates to the Eight of Swords, because in a deck that I use very, very regularly, the Osho Zen deck, the Emperor is portrayed as, well, it's a very kind of fiery, vibrant man, but he's got chains around him that he's busting through, and he's got like a torch in his hand, and there's wings and all sorts of stuff. But the card, the word on the card is called the Rebel.
Mm.
And, you know, the Eight of Swords is very much about not allowing our walls, our defenses to come up and get in the way of allowing somebody in. And the Emperor, in that regard of being the Rebel, also seems to reflect that of, I'm going to take ownership, like you said, of my body, of this experience, and I'm going to break through the chains, the barriers, the defenses, the walls that I might have. And that doesn't mean necessarily in the moment of sex, because that may mean that we have to do that outside of that to work through some of those issues. Where those things come from, so that they don't get in the way when we do have the opportunity to enter into a sexual relationship. And also, you know, traditionally, even though this isn't what I associate it to, but the traditional astrological association for the Emperor is Aries.
Oh, yes.
And so, you know, so I think that also makes a lot of sense from an amazing sex kind of standpoint, because you have Aries, which is ruled by Mars, which is also the planet associated with the month of May, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so we have, that sense of not holding back, of just going for it, of being spontaneous and being very fiery and aggressive in a sense, but more, I think, just assertive or proactive, which is like asking for what you want.
Or isn't it Taurus?
For
May?
Well, the zodiac, from a zodiac standpoint, yes, we're in May. I mean, well, of course we're in May. We're in Taurus. Uh-huh. But, it's funny because I always look to French to remember these things. Uh-huh. But like the month of March, I'm thinking of March. Well, never mind then. Forget all I said about that.
It's okay. But no, Tauruses are also very assertive and very
Tauruses
powerful.
Bring it down to earth and make it real. You know,
they
know what they go after something, but then they make it real rather than just making it a pipe dream.
Yeah, and now a listener might say, that's all well and good, but you can't have two emperor types. And I'm not associating gender with this, but you know, women can be just as emperor. But I think you can. I think you can have two powerful emperor people having a great experience at the same time. It doesn't always have to be a sort of polarizing experience. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, I think that could be quite the fiery dynamic.
It could be. That would be your 48 orgasms right there.
That's right. And if it's two men, then that probably is still 40 orgasms.
Yeah, well.
So I'm thinking that maybe we should let people process this a little bit. You know, if you keep throwing fuel on a fire, it's bound to explode.
Ooh.
So we'll take the tantric approach. We kind of, you know, raised the wave of energy. So now we're just going to let it come back down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we will perhaps enter into our conversation with Ava.
Excellent. Excellent. Capital idea.
No, well, thank you. And see what kind of wisdom and suggestions and things that she has to offer us as well. So, are you ready to converse?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Yes, we've added to our lineup of lively, thought-provoking shows, but don't forget our original Sunday morning lineup at 10:30 a.m. Join us for Healing Conversations with Mildred Lynn McDonald every first Sunday. Revolution with Heisi Lutmers every second Sunday. Convergence with John Carosella every third Sunday. And our popular on-air call-in show, the fourth Sunday of every month. We're excited. Give us a listen as we continue to create new and entertaining ways for you to shine your inner light. Join us at Firefly Willows, LIVE.
Native New Yorker of Caribbean heritage and has worked with tarot and other psychic and metaphysical practices since the early 1980s. Her writing on dance and other arts have been published since 1976, most notably in Dance Magazine, Soho News, The Village Voice, The New York Times, The Philadelphia Inquirer, and The Gay City News. Also on her blog, Infinite Body. She teaches at the annual Writing on Dance course for New York Live Art. Her essays and poetry have appeared in various journals and anthologies, including The Zenith of Desire, Contemporary Lesbian Poems About Sex, Does Your Mama Know, an anthology on Black lesbian coming out stories. An eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. Poets on 9/11. And spirited, affirming the soul and black gay lesbian identity. You'll find out more about her and more of her writing on dance, performance, and theater on her website, magicaleva.wix.com/psychictarot. And we're very, very happy to welcome Eva Yasintwa to this episode of The Amethyst Oracle. Eva, thank you so much for calling in.
My pleasure. How are you guys doing out there?
We're doing well.
Fabulous, fabulous day in the land of California.
We're having a fabulous day here, too. We're actually having spring in New York, which is something that we don't have a lot of. We usually go from winter almost directly into hot summer.
From freezing
we're
to
having
boiling.
We're having a very unusual year.
Oh, excellent. Let's check the astrology on that, Hi-C. What's going on?
Yeah, what is going on?
What indications can you see?
Actually, I know that with Mars doing what it's doing, and I think Mercury in there as well, the next few weeks can be a lot of major storms. They're also anticipating the next few months, they say, a major earthquake because of the planetary stuff. So we may not
Ooh.
Be, we may
Whereabouts?
Have some,
Whereabouts,
well,
do you
that's,
think?
That's what I'm not exactly sure of.
Mm-hmm.
I just know that somebody mentioned that this is a planetary configuration that's very ripe for that kind of thing to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if nothing else, it also is a very, over the next few weeks, it's a very key time for like major storms and that kind of thing, both weather storms as well as political and storms and kind of stormy in our personal lives. So we just
mm-hmm.
kind of have to be prepared for that. And that probably will kick
right.
off mostly with on the 20th with the new, not with the, yeah, with the new moon, right?
Well, in terms of our weather, something that those of us who love birds and birding, I'm a birder, have been noticing is that we are not really having the spring migration that we would hope to have. There are fewer and fewer birds that we're seeing coming through New York, and New York is a major, New York City and the environs around it is a major area for spring and fall migration. But the numbers of birds are down dramatically. I have friends who do bird walks in Central Park, which is like a huge place for seeing tremendous species of birds, and they're just not seeing too many at all, and it's really shocking. And one friend said it's probably because of the southeasterly winds that we've been getting over the past several days, but this is prime time. We should be seeing them, and they're not here. And I just think that there are all sorts of things going on with our planet that we did not anticipate, that, you know, we're really in the mess of it, I think, unfortunately,
right.
for those of us who are, you know, really loving the Earth, the Mother Earth, and all that she gives us, the great gift that she is, to see things changing so dramatically is very hurtful and very frightening.
And I wonder if they know there's something in the air, and so they're holding off their migration to avoid perhaps some storm systems and things that
well,
are coming.
Exactly. Yeah, when you said... you know, the storms are coming and there may be an earthquake somewhere. The animals they are aware of these things and they do make adjustments accordingly. So they may be actually telling us something that we need to know.
Yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned that, especially with birding, as people are sort of rediscovering ancient sort of bird observation divination techniques that you know, in the classics, you would hear people talk about the, you know, observing the birds and telling the future with that. But just like people are learning with things such as scary as maybe entrail divination, there are real scientific correspondences that people were looking for back then when people used to try to determine like a new temple site. Mm-hmm. When they look at the entrails, that would tell them that if the water was any good.
Mm-hmm.
In that area. So it's interesting, we might, you know, think of our forebears with
observing nature in that way. So to,
I'm sure that there are cultures in which they observe where the animals go and what they do when they get there, and they get a sense of places that are just good to either to go to and to, you know, set down your roots there, or to avoid, you know, based on what they observe animals do. I'm sure that that's part of the story as well.
And I think even more...
You follow animals, they'll tell you a lot.
Yeah, I think even more broadly, kind of what you were mentioning a couple of minutes ago, that we've gotten very out of touch with the natural world and the natural rhythms of things. And we could actually watch the animals and that sort of thing to know that, you know, probably back in the old days, they would see, oh, the birds aren't migrating, so we need to, you know, get everything prepared and store away some food because there's storms coming or something
exactly.
like that. And, you know, now we don't pay attention to that, and then we act like we're all surprised that there's even a storm to begin with.
Exactly. You know, when I travel, when my wife and I travel, if we go to an area where there's like a great expanse of sky, you don't have a lot of tall buildings around and you don't have a lot of lights at night, and you can actually watch the weather coming to you. You can watch it developing. It's the most powerful thing to see that and to really get a sense of the energy of it, the look of it. After a while, you pretty much know what your day is going to be.
Right.
You know? And the other thing is there are watching the swallows and the swifts talk again about the bird world. In Italian, they call it the rondini. Sorry, wherever we go, anywhere, no matter what country it is, it could be Italy, it could be anywhere, where you see the swallows, you can pretty much tell whether you're going to get rain, you know, or if it's going to be a clear day, depending on where they are in the sky, because they go where they can find the little insects that they grab up as they're flying. And so if they're high, I think if I remember correctly, if they're high up, it's going to be a clearer day, and if they're low down, it's most likely you will get rain. And so it's kind of fun for us to make those observations now, but our ancestors, no matter what culture you come from, pretty much the ancestors watched and they learned from those types of observations.
And if you think of like animal medicine and animal symbolism, birds are kind of that symbol for the connection between the higher realms or the divine realms and the earthly realms. And so, you know, they tend to be much more messenger indicators.
Yes.
Whereas the animals that are earthbound are much more like personal spirit guides and that kind of thing. Not that you can't have a personal animal guide that's a bird, just to clarify for people. But I think that from that kind of what Charlie was talking about, kind of that divination standpoint, which really is a little bit kind of what you were also saying, is watching the birds for the signs. You know, we would do well to pay more attention to the bird world than I think what we do for bigger messages, bigger signs, bigger indications, bigger oracles. That, you know, that we've again kind of lost touch with or lost sight of.
Absolutely.
And if there is any kind of storm or earthquake, I see, we can probably blame it on gay marriage.
That's right.
Oh!
You say,
because we are so powerful, we've been responsible for everything that has happened.
And yeah, absolutely.
All the bad things.
That's right.
You notice how it's always the bad, we're powerful, but it's always the bad things we're responsible for.
Exactly.
Have you guys heard the latest out of New York with Cardinal Dolan saying that there are certain people who are not welcome into St. Patrick's Cathedral and they need to clean their hands before they come in? And, of course, we are part of that category. And there was a demonstration yesterday, a protest in front of the cathedral with people who showed up with, I guess they must have had a bag of ash or like a bucket of ash or something. And they put the ash on their hands, they dirtied their hands, and they tried to get into the cathedral. And the cops were called, and they were barred from going in until they washed their hands. And, of course, they wouldn't do that. So they stood there with their palms facing the cathedral, their dirty hands, and, you know, wondering
why all, and these are Catholics, these are not like, you know, anybody else, these are Roman Catholics who, for whom, going into St. Patrick's Cathedral, you know, and they were not just our people, they were not just gay and lesbian, whatever, they were allies as well.
Wow.
And, you know, they feel that St. Patrick's Cathedral is their home and that they should be welcome there. And this was just such, to me, this is just such an incredible example of just how crazy things have gotten.
Yeah.
And it just keeps, like, story after story.
I know.
With, both of my worlds were rocked. I was like, the Pope was saying you shouldn't turn to tarot readers.
Yes, I heard that one too.
Like, man, what's left?
I don't know. I grew up in the Catholic Church, and which never really took with me. So when I decided at some point, you know, this really isn't for me, that was fine. But I went all the way through high school and Fordham University with the Jesuits, you know, at a time, though, that things were very progressive. But I really just feel that people have to realize that certain things are ancient. They precede the Roman Catholic Church. And the Roman Catholic Church, in fact, has absorbed so much from paganism and from world culture. And in some cases, that's why it's so appealing to a lot of people, because they recognize certain things in the symbolism and the pageantry and the music that has always been there for humanity across the cultures. So I think we kind of have to, you know, it's almost like you have to say, look, respect your elders.
Yeah.
You know, it's paganism is the original manifestation of humans' love of symbol and of ritual and of spirituality and sense of greatness, that there's sense that there's something more that infuses our lives and gives it meaning.
And speaking of powerful spiritual people, I'd like to talk to you a bit more, Ava, about your own spiritual path after you mentioned up through Catholicism. You got pretty far with that, but then things really took off for you, I think, after that. And I'd love to hear more about that journey of yours.
Well, you know, I guess I've always been, and I don't know where this started with me, but back when I was a kid, there were shows on TV like, you know, The Twilight Zone and other science fiction shows and sci-fi movies and things of that nature. Somehow, my head got into a lot of interesting spaces around esoteric practices, psychic development, mysticism. I was born in 1952, so I was kind of growing up in the 60s and in college in the 70s. And so it was the sort of thing that was in the air, and I was very, very drawn to it. I was a very interior-oriented kid. You know, I stayed off by myself pretty much. I read a lot. I was very bookish. I loved to write. But I wasn't, you know, tremendously outgoing. I was very shy. But it really captured my imagination. And also, my mother was a visual artist. She didn't do it professionally. She just sort of did it, you know, along with being a homemaker. But her sense of color and texture and interest in the visual, I think, is probably part of what made that accessible for me. And so symbolism was something that very early on attracted me. So I was reading, like, a lot of esoteric stuff, a lot of stuff about comparative religion even, and got interested in psychic development research and what have you, and got interested at some point in tarot. I think I took it up probably in the late 70s, early 80s. By the early 80s, I was definitely into it, and I was studying pretty much on my own. I took one course in it, and we would read for one another, and I read for people, and, you know, I would kind of observe the reactions that people would get when they did readings. And it was like, okay, yeah, this is interesting, and so forth. I would do a reading for people, and people would go, oh, wait a minute. Oh, whoa, really? You know, so it was that leaning forward reaction that kind of said to me, I should really go deeper with this. There's something here to pay attention to. So I one of the first books that I took a look at was Tarot for Yourself by Mary Kay Greer.
A classic.
Which became my manual and my Bible. And it's the book that is probably the only book that I wholeheartedly recommend to people. And, you know, I've had occasion to not only advise people around this, but also to teach workshops and courses in it. And it's the one book that I always, always tell people to read. Because there was such a sense of freedom for your creative gift, you know, your own sense of play, your own sense of imagination, your own creativity. And I ran with that. I just ran with it. And I read for myself a lot. And then I started reading for other people. And I would get good results. I think things over the years shifted to a place where I was less, and I am less concerned with process, with the procedure of it, and more just, you know, it's almost like what I said to you before we started talking for the show. I really just want to be there and be present with whoever I'm reading for and whatever the cards are doing, what they're saying, and not be prepared. Just be open. You know, just go with it. When I was first coming out as a lesbian, which was like in my early 30s, I came out I first came out as bisexual. I went to a group at our Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Center here in New York. And it was a bisexual group. But eventually I came out as a lesbian. And one of the groups that I attended over at the center was a women's spirituality group called Moonfire. And I got very excited about doing rituals and really just, you know, just creating them, not doing things that I received, but creating them. And eventually got involved with another organization called the Women's Rights Center, which unfortunately no longer exists, and that's RITES. And that was another opportunity for me to, you know, to play and to show my sense of what the power of imagery is in just to create things, just to stir those creative juices. And we had lots of women from different walks of life and different cultures who would come, and we would just create beautiful things for them that would be transformative. I think some of the women who actually became priests in the Roman Catholic Church, and not officially, of course, but they sort of split off and did their own thing and were ordained as priests, women priests, they did that there at that center. And it's really unfortunate that it's something that did not survive. But it was there for several years, and so we had the benefit of that. But my practice as a reader and as an instructor of tarot has been going on since the early 80s. And as much as I love tarot, I would say that I feel the power of those images, but I feel more that there are more images that we can connect with. And the thing is about imagery and not necessarily about any specific traditions in imagery. But I use tarot because it's relatively familiar to most people. And it works as a system for most people. But I'm very interested now in what I call image streaming. Which, you know, others might call clairvoyance. And that is just allowing any imagery to come up and interpreting that.
Very cool. When you're working with tarot, is there a favorite deck that you like to go to? Or
I am a collector, but not to the extent that most people are. I have, like, maybe about upward of 80 decks at this point. Mm-hmm. But and I know people who have many, many more than that. But over the years, I've had several decks that have been treasure decks for me to work with people. And right now, the one that I've been working with, I guess, for the past few years very happily is the World Spirit Tarot.
I like
the imagery of it. I like the multicultural depictions of it. And it's just a very good deck. I have an issue with, you know, there are decks that may have very good concepts, but if the art does not appeal to me, I can't really work with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very important to me that I feel comfortable. And even if a deck, you know, like a lot of people are like, well, the deck has to be politically correct in a certain way. Even if it's politically correct, if it's not attractive to me, if it's not aesthetically appealing to me, I really can't work with it. So,
absolutely.
And I think that when you talk about, you know, this plethora of symbolism that exists, I think, one, that's why we can see so many decks made, whether it's Tarot or Oracle or whatever, because a creator of a deck will tap into a particular set of symbols that's resonating for them, but is certainly not limiting what symbols there are for people. And I know there's purists that'll say, well, you know, if it's not the Rider-Waite-Smith deck or the Thoth deck, then it's really not as legitimate or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I also wonder if when people start to focus too much on trying to be politically correct in the way that they're presenting the imagery in a deck, if that's then getting in the way and diluting the actual symbolism itself, because they're trying to manipulate the symbolism rather than letting the symbolism speak for itself.
Well, I think the way around that is to understand that there is something, you know, the imagery is kind of like a little signal that says pay attention here or pay attention there. It's not, there's nothing in the card itself that is powerful. It's just, here's a signal to you to click on a part of your imagination that will give you a story that is, that carries a message that is important for you to know or for your querent to know. I liked what Thalassa was saying to you in the previous interview about, you know, she wants things to be useful. That's a very important word for me as well. It has to be useful more than anything else. Sometimes when I'm looking at a card, it won't just be, for example, if it's, say, the Hierophant. You can interact with the idea of the Hierophant, but you can also find your eye attracted to a particular part of the image. So that even if, say, it's a depiction of the Hierophant that disturbs you in some way or doesn't work for you, maybe there's something in that image that has the little key that opens up a part of your consciousness that then issues forth a message. So it could be a color. It could be a shape. It could be the direction in which an eye is gazing. It could be a little symbol off in the corner. It could be anything. It doesn't have to be the entire thing. So I find myself, you know, as much as I said that I have a difficulty working with particular decks because of the way that they look, I still find myself, no matter what I'm looking at, finding that point of entry that helps the story to come forth from me. What is that point of entry that I can get, or what is that signal from the card that helps me to turn on that information? And that's also why I am working more and more with not even needing the card, you know, just sitting and allowing an image to come up into my head. And it may be not fully formed. It could be just a color, you know. It could be a moving shape. It could be, again, a little symbol of something. It could be something that looks very ordinary. But if you look at that ordinary image, say it's an apple, or say it's a key, or say it's a doorway, and you think about, all right, what does that apple suggest to you? Or what does a key suggest to you? You can go into that image every bit as much as you can go into an elaborate tarot card of any kind and work with that and give someone an answer based on that, because that's frankly what people have done forever. You know, we haven't always had these cards, but we've always had something visual that gave us information. You know,
so for someone who was someone who is wanting to get the courage to take that leap from being a card reader to do image streaming, do you have any advice for them about how to transition themselves into being able to experience symbols in that more personal way?
Oh, sure. Well, you can start, you can actually even start with the cards, because if you take one card, say, all right, I'm looking at the Two of Swords here in the World Spirit deck, and you look at the imagery of the card. You just focus on that card and look all around it and take in the details. I have a figure here who is standing with his legs over a gap of space. So it's like maybe one cliff on one side, another cliff on the other side, one foot on one foot on the other. He is wielding two swords, one in either hand. It's a night scene. You see the stars behind. You see the crescent moon. On one side of, on one cliff, he is accompanied by a rabbit. There are also trees, a very dark trees in the background. And below him, in that gap, you see the valley. You see a valley with greenery, and beyond that, you see an ocean. And beyond that, you see the mountains. So it's a very rich image. And if I were just even to start with that, look at it, take in all those details, close my eyes, and see if I can recapture in my mind's eye any of those details. It doesn't have to be perfect. And you begin to train your mind to see the imagery within. Maybe you'll discover by doing that, as you take some time with it, that there are certain parts of that image that are more delicious to you than others in the moment. So maybe you might be attracted to the moon, the crescent moon, or to one of those swords, or to the fact of the valley beneath him. You know, and then that's the thing that you stay and you meditate on, and you see where that takes you. Where does the image of the sword take you? Where does the image of the moon take you? Where does the image of the valley take you? You know, and so forth and so on. And just begin to work with your cards that way. Now, if you don't want to work with the cards, you want to just go fly off by yourself, just meditate. You know, close your eyes, get as still as possible, and allow imagery to come to you without any forcing. You know, without any questioning, what is the first image that comes up? Maybe it might not even be an image. Maybe it's a word. Maybe that's the way it will come to you. Maybe it's a sound, or maybe it's a feeling. Allow whatever it is to come up and sit with it and see what it tells you. Maybe it will change. You know, you might have one of the things that the classic clairvoyance training is they have you envision a rose, right? So maybe you have a rose, and maybe it has a different color. You know, it may be a red rose, or it may be a pink rose, or a white rose, or a yellow rose. What is the shape of the rose? Is it a tiny bud? You know, is it beginning to open? Is it fully opened? Is it wilting in some way? All of these different things have information that you can get used to working with. And so if somebody asks you a question and you go within and you see some of these images come up, you can respond to that question based on your interpretation of that image. So it's a lot of it is just being able to let go of expectation and allow things to come to you. If you work with a card, allow that card to talk to you. If you work just with imagery that comes up, just observe what's coming up and what changes happen with it. And the more you practice it, you know, I'd say do it at least once a day, the more comfortable you become with it, and the more you'd be able, you would be able to put words to it that would be useful for you or for someone that you're reading for.
And
there's also, you know, all sorts of, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with shamanic journeying. And you can do that with the cards as well, because the cards can act as portals. You go into the image, and you look around, and you see what happens. And you can go on a journey in these very rich images and see what the journey tells you, the gifts that it gives you. It's a very convenient way of doing a shaman-type journey, actually, because
no
a lot is offered to you without your having to imagine it.
And also being able to see symbolism everywhere.
Oh, yes.
You know, and you've been doing dance journalism since, I think, the late 70s.
That's right.
And I'm wondering if perhaps part of the attraction or resonance for you for dance is that it really is kind of a living symbolism in terms of the way that they are creating constant image in movement.
Yes.
But then
it's
something to take that and start to say, what does that mean to me? What is that image saying to me?
That is very true. And also the nature of that, it's ephemeral. You know, it's like the imagery that would come up in your mind. It's there one moment, and the next moment it's either changed or it's totally gone. And it's also something that needs your attention and your presence with. So it's a relationship that develops between you and what you're seeing. You know, and we are profoundly affected by watching dance. In a similar way that we are profoundly affected by, you know, observing any kind of imagery, powerful imagery. I think that my ability to sit and be open to what I'm looking at when I'm looking at performances is very much like going and sitting down in front of a querent and reading the energy from that person and listening carefully to what he or she is saying. And getting a sense of what the energy is around that person and around the issue that they're talking about. And then seeing what comes up in the cards and just being, you know, hey, you know, here are the cards. You know, I'm not sitting down with a theory. I'm not sitting down with a judgment. I'm sitting down with you and we're going to see what happens. And just feeling open-hearted and willing to go on that ride with that person and with what the cards are showing me. Both, I think, are incredibly challenging and, for me, incredibly complex and incredible fun. I've gotten to a place where I really feel like I'm up for the fun of it, you know. And even if it's a very intense reading, maybe even about a difficult situation, there's something really exhilarating about that. And, yes, in a similar way to watching tremendous, powerful dancers, especially up close, and, you know, catching the energy off them and really allowing yourself to feel that and to be moved by that. And then having the complex challenge of then having to turn it into words so that you offer something of that experience to your reader. I think that doing that work has helped in my work with tarot, and maybe doing the tarot work has helped in my work with engaging with dance and writing about dance. I've been thinking about that, and I do think that there is a connection.
In 1992, you founded something called Radical Magic, and I wondered if you could give us a little insight into what that does, what that offers, what that's about.
Oh, okay. Well, Radical Magic was pretty much my business, incorporating not only my tarot work, my tarot counseling, but also a variety of workshops that I would do around these types of topics, not only tarot and divination, but also things like energy healing, stress management, and things of that nature. And I did through that, under that umbrella, I did not only my own workshops, but I would also work with a variety of LGBT organizations in our community, women's organizations like the Women's Rights Center that I mentioned before, health organizations, and so forth and so on, people of color, pretty much to bring to people for whom the quote-unquote New Age was something esoteric and separate and maybe even elitist and inaccessible, to bring it really to a place of understanding that these are tools, these are modalities that we can all plug into and get some value out of. And particularly in the time in our community when we were dealing in the early stages of the HIV/AIDS crisis, there was a lot of interest and energy around dealing with emotional healing and spiritual healing around the issues that people were dealing with, not only the physical issues, but also the emotional, psychological issues, the tremendous stress. So there was that interest. In terms of women's community, a sense that women wanted to take back a sense of their own creativity and power and to reawaken skills and modes of doing spirituality that were historically inherent to us. And so I, again, just tapping into my own interest and my own creativity, I would tailor various modalities for these different organizations in the community. And so that's basically what Radical Magic was. It was my private practice, but also my public work. And I still do that. I don't call, it's not under that rubric anymore. It's just me, People can get in touch with me if they want to have consultations. But I'm also available to do workshops and of various kinds. And love sharing these things that I know and that I've worked with.
Very cool. And so now when you were starting your path with tarot and also at the same time, it was at the same time that the recurrence of paganism and environmental rights and women's rights were all kind of stirring together in this really, it was a really heady time for all of these groups. And there was a lot of interconnection that I think you were speaking to beautifully at that time. And it seems like as each of those, some of those groups have gone into different directions, like the connection between environmentalism and paganism is still there, but it's sort of moving in different ways. Also, like women's rights and feminism and women's spirituality seems to, even though they're connected in some ways, in certain ways have drifted. And I was wondering, what's your perspective on sort of spirituality and queer women's community these years later, after the 80s and the early 90s when there was a lot going on, connected between the two?
I think people are still trying to figure that out. Those of us from that age are getting older, and
you don't look it, though.
People, what's that?
You don't look it, though.
Oh, thank you.
Spring chicken.
I am a crone. I'm officially a crone. The younger generations are finding their own ways around this, I think. I was just reading something this morning about a woman who was saying that she wondered if the term feminist was something that we needed to let go of, because people, the younger women are doing feminist things and they have feminist ideas, but they just don't like the name. The name seems to be in the way. And I actually think that part of what any generation does is that it comes up and it says, you guys before us, you may have done some things, but you didn't get the job done. And you've left us with a lot of mess. And we really want our own way to approach these things. We want our own labels for things and so forth and so on. We don't have to adopt everything that you do. The other thing that we have to pay attention to is that with the economy the way that it is, I think that people are a little bit more, a little less community oriented, a little bit more focused on how am I going to survive. I see that in the dance community, and it's probably true elsewhere. You know, it's wonderful to have certain things like organizations that would serve community in the ways that the Women's Rights Center did. But the Women's Rights Center could not continue economically. You know, it's similar to the way that we've lost a lot of women's bookstores and a lot of spiritual shops. You know, we just can't keep these things together. And so it's partly the economy, it's people's survival mode headspace. You know, I have to pay attention to whatever keeps me going and my family going, what have you. I don't have the time to get together in a group and do ritual. You know, so what do we have now? Well, we have the internet. We have a lot of things going on Facebook. We have, the tarot community on Facebook, where you met me, is enormous and very active, very powerful, and very supportive, and a lot of fun. That seems to me to be the new space for community and the new space, actually, for a very different type of ritual, the ritual of daily checking in. And supporting people in whatever their process may be, and sharing information, and giving cyber pats on the back to folks, no matter where they are across the country or around the world, and just saying, you know, we have something here that is valuable. We're holding on to it. We're uplifting it, and we're supporting one another in it. It seems to be the way that it's going. And as Thalassa said, it is beautiful to be able to get together on occasion in the same room, to breathe the same air, to share the energy close up, to see beautiful faces, and to do things together that generates the power. But there's also this other power, which I don't think we have totally figured out yet, you know, exactly what it is and what to do with it. But it is there, and I, for one, am one of the people who, rather than feeling that it's something that we have to be afraid of, or, you know, feel like, oh, you know, we're being diminished by this in some way, I think it's a new approach that I feel increasingly comfortable with utilizing. And so I feel like, you know, as long as we understand that the tools are ours to use and not for us to be used by the tools, I think we'll be okay with that. I really do. And look,
I like that,
you know, you guys and I got together as a result of that, right?
The magic of the internet. Yes. But now we can all go to like a live performance at some point.
That's right. Which is what I urge people to do all the time.
Yeah,
because
I like
that's
that
really where you feel the energy big time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
YouTube is good, but, you know.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yes, I think, like you say, it's important not to demonize the tools as somehow being at fault for something we feel is lacking or missing in ourselves or in our lives.
Yeah.
But I would also challenge people when you said, you know, that people will say, well, I don't have time to go to a ritual or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would challenge people by then asking back to them, well, when did we stop making the time to go to ritual or to do those things? Because it's not so much about having the time versus we have to choose how we use our time. And we have to look at how we're putting other things as somehow more important than the ritual or the in-person interaction or that kind of thing, which is where I think what you said, the tool starts to control us.
Yes, that is true not only about ritual and spirituality, but about a lot of things. I mean, even things like healthy eating or, you know, taking time to go out in the sun. You have to love yourself enough to do that, to make it a priority. And, you know, we live in a very go, go, go. I mean, not all of us, because some people live very graciously, in environments where they can do that for themselves. But if you're in an urban environment and you live the kind of lifestyles that a lot of us live, there's always something that is on your plate, that's in your face, some obligation somewhere that's going to take you away from the good things, you know? And it's important to take a step back and say, wait a minute, I'm as every bit as important as all of that. And in fact, if I'm not taking care of myself, I'm not going to be around for all of that. I'm not going to be good for anybody else. And here's the thing, too, is those of us who do things like tarot, and we do it seriously, and we do it for other people, we're no good to anybody else unless we're being good to ourselves and nurturing ourselves. You know, the time that I take out to sit with my cats and let them purr, curl up and sleep on my lap, you know, and or the time I take to read a book or go out in the sun or go to an exercise class or go birding, you know, all of that feeds back into my ability to sit down with somebody and really be present with them and to share with them whatever they're going on, whatever is going on with them. But if I'm constantly stressed out, that's not going to happen all that well. You know, you can fool with it for a while, but after a while it begins to take its toll. So I like to remember a balance. I mean, being as busy as I am in the dance community, that in itself can really take me away from a lot of things that are good for me, and I have to watch that. You know, especially as I'm getting older, I really have to watch it and make certain that my days and my weeks are balanced, and I'm not just like out at a show every night. And which can in New York City, that can easily happen. And with the kind of responsibility and the kind of cred that I have in this community, that can easily happen, because everybody needs the, you know, the attention and the coverage, and it's a real problem. But the critic and the tarot reader and the clairvoyant and the energy healer and the artist and the teacher, we all need to be in a place of balance and sweetness to ourselves, or else we can't be that way with anybody else.
So would you be,
while it just doesn't work.
So would you be willing to pull a card from your World Spirit deck and ask how we can cultivate that balance within ourselves, for not just us, the three of us, but I mean
certainly,
everybody listening?
I certainly would be happy to do that. And what happened is that two cards came out at the same time.
Talk about balance, you need the two.
There we go, the talent.
One being the Seven of Cups and the other being the Chariot reversed. Mm. So what I like about the Seven of Cups is this idea of imagination and just really opening our imagination and allowing imagery and information to come in and using it creatively, understanding that we don't hold on to anything, that it streams through us, and that as we are streaming the stuff through us, it's all nurturing us because it's touching various aspects of who we are. Just to realize that there is energy all around us in the universe that we can call upon and again, stream it through us and let that energy nurture the parts of who we are. And to realize that we are not just, you know, it's like, yes, I have a certain identity in this particular lifetime. I am a black woman of African Caribbean heritage. I'm a lesbian. I'm a pagan. To a certain extent, I also consider myself an atheist, which is another story for another day. you know, there are a variety of identities that we carry and ways that we understand ourselves. But to maybe understand that there is a world of other things that we are as well and that influence us and that streams through us, you know, as we do this walk of particularity in this life, this particular lifetime, we do this walk of particularity. There's also all this other stuff that streams through us and that can feed us and opens us to possibilities that we would not necessarily think of. And this goes back to what I said before about the ancestors. We have many ancestors that we may not know about. And the Chariot card. When I see the Chariot card come up, I think about having a sense of focus for the path and being able to, you know, take the steps along the way towards a goal by being totally focused on it. And the reason that it's reversed, I think, is because it's a developing process, just growing stronger and stronger in your sense of focus and your sense of will. And understanding after a while that there are certain things that belong with you and other things that don't. And letting go of those things that don't belong with you. Now, those things that don't belong with you, the things that do not serve that ultimate goal that you're moving towards. Okay? So it's a development of that. And I would say as a practice, one of the things that I recommend I teach a course in writing about dance for an organization called New York Live Arts. And for the final project that I have my students working on, I've asked them to actually come up with something that would be akin to an artist statement or a mission statement for their project so that they can stay on the path of what their project is and not get side distracted by anything that's going on in their lives. Just, you know, this is why I am doing this project. This is what it's about. This is what I'm about. And this is the message that I want to bring forth in my writing, in my work. So I would suggest that people think about creating a mission statement for themselves. Sometimes it's called a vision statement. I like to call it a guiding statement. And really figure out what are you about? You know, what is important to you? Why are you doing the things that you're doing? And what's the ultimate goal? You know, maybe it's that you want to give a certain gift to the world. Think about what that is and revisit that and fine-tune that, you know, as you go along. It's very helpful sometimes in days when you just feel like, what is this all about? Why am I here? Why am I beating my head against the wall? You know, it can be very useful to remind you of your purpose and to keep you at it.
Wonderful. I love that. Especially, I just adored your Seven of Cups explanation. Mm-hmm. So often I get caught up in the, oh boy, like maybe we're overwhelmed or decision making, but I love your connection of that card to the imagination and sort of the infinite power of imagination. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have a more balanced month now.
I hope so.
Have you to thank or blame? Wonderful. Thank you. Is there now, since we're all about the future on this show, or often about the future on this show,
yeah,
what can we look forward to in the future from Ava? What's on the horizon?
Oh, well, in terms of tarot, I've been doing these really wonderful workshops with people at all levels of experience with tarot, which was a real revelation to me that I could get people in the same room who didn't necessarily, maybe they had some experience or maybe they read a couple of books or maybe they didn't, and they could all kind of work together and it would be powerful. You know, no one felt like they were being left behind. They didn't understand. I'm all about making everything accessible. That's the thing. And so it worked. And so I'm planning another workshop for possibly the middle of July. And this one will be called Tarot Intensive. And I'll be working with the idea of like the shamanic journeying. What Jung would have called active imagination, using that or using a shamanic process of journeying into the card in order for people to really interact with the cards intimately and to learn about them and to understand the transformative power of those symbols from close up. So it's like going into, like you're entering a movie and the movie arranges itself around you and things happen, and you get all kinds of information, and it's really delicious. I've been working with that for a very, very long time, and I wanted to offer it to the students that I've been working with, but I'm also, you know, excited about the possibility of welcoming more people to that process.
Wonderful. And how would people find out more about joining you in that journey?
Okay, well, if they want to get in touch with me, one way they can do it is to go to a website that I have for my psychic tarot services. And it is, I'll just spell this out, it's Magical Ava, MagicalEva dot Wix, Wix.com / psychic tarot, all one word. So again, that's Magical Ava, MagicalEva dot Wix, Wix.com / psychic tarot. And you won't find information about the workshop, but there is a contact form at the bottom of the page, and you can just write to me, and I will put you on the list and give you information about this workshop and other stuff that we may be doing in the future.
Wonderful. Well, that sounds like a wonderful way to experience tarot and do some inner work.
So if you're in the New York City area, I welcome you to join this developing group. And we're all about tarot, but also in a broader sense about psychic development. And it's a great, great group.
So thank you very much, Ava, for joining us today here.
It was my pleasure. It was lots of fun
really
to talk to you.
I loved your perspective, and I'm really, I love image streaming. I'm going to experiment. I'm going to find my my world spirit to start with, to let my imagination take flight and take me out of the car and into the cosmos. So I really appreciate that, and I think a lot of our listeners will appreciate that technique as a bridge between traditional cartomancy and letting your intuitive clairvoyant side support your experience.
And hopefully there will be some good downloading and not a lot of buffering in your streaming.
That's right. Ooh. Right. Clear download to you all. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And that, I think, was a most interesting conversation, Charlie.
I love Ava. She is a fabu guest.
I agree.
But speaking of every woman and being every woman, I have a fun deck for us to use for this month's Living the Queer Life. It's the Goddess Power Pack. So,
And before you talk about that, I just want to let people know that are waiting in the queue for readings. We will get to you. So if you're in the queue and we're doing readings, but the live stream cuts off, as long as you're in the queue, we'll still get to you. So do not panic.
Don't panic unless you want to. So let's see. I pulled the Goddess Power Pack takes ancient goddesses and puts them in modern settings. So pulling from the pack, we get... Oh, okay, good. Sulis, S-U-L-I-S. Sulis is a Celtic goddess. She's the goddess of the healing springs at Bath, England, where people go to take the waters and to rest up and restore. And this envisions Sulis, who is also syncretized with Minerva, in a Bath and Body Shop, taking a look at some products and putting them into a shopping bag. So we're going to the emphasis on living in life in this month. Living the queer life is about making sure you have a good life and giving yourself all your body needs and giving good things to your body. And with Sulis, I want to make the distinction. It's not about denying yourself things or worrying about what you need to cut out. This is just telling you, all of you, do something good for your body. Moisturize, get a peel, get a massage. Do something to help your physical being heal and be nourished, and then your psychic being will have an easier ride. Anyway, you've actually been to Bath, haven't you?
I have. I loved Bath, and I've been to those springs, the
like
bathhouse.
Sulfur,
yeah. I found it very entrancing. I think it was a beautiful place. And actually, one of the cool things that they do is they have people dress up in period outfits, and at like random times you'll be walking around in the baths, and then all of a sudden here come these people, and they're just like walking around in their togas and things, and they'll actually but there's also guards, like Roman guards and stuff, and they'll interact with you in character and stuff. It was very, very cool.
Wonderful.
And yep. You know, Sulis was a goddess of like sacred springs and wells. Mm-hmm. And one thing I would say for living the queer life this month that may indicate is listen to your intuition, pay attention to the things that may be bubbling up from the depths, and whether that means there are things that are deeper going on if we just take the time to look, as well as if we take the time to stop, like going to the spa or taking a bath and allowing those things to bubble up to the surface and to emerge for us. There's something deeper going on, and there's more information and things that are trying to come through during this month if we just stop and be still long enough to hear it or to access it and see what it is.
Absolutely. Or just go to a bathhouse.
Well, you know, there is that.
There is that.
I think I will celebrate Sulis this
month. That's right. She's the card set. Well, that's living the queer life for the month of May.
Yes. And certainly if you want to know more about Sulis, I would encourage anyone listening to look up information on her, because aspects about her and what she's about and what she has to offer are going to be very relevant to what this month holds for us in a general sense. Hence the reason why she came up.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know we have a couple of people that are waiting in the queue for some readings. So I think that what we will do is we will take a very quick little break, just as a little transition. You know, one has to have proper transitions, and it'll just be just for 1 minute. I promise people, just 1 minute. And then as soon as we come back, we will start taking calls for the readings. Charlie.
And there I am.
Little reminder to have some sex in the summer. Getting
well,
it on.
Sure.
So, shall we go to our first caller?
Yes.
All right. Then, let's see. Our first caller is calling from area code 510. Are you there, caller from 510?
I am. Hi, it's Camille.
Why, hello.
Hi, Camille.
Camille.
Long time no see, darling. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. Thank you for waiting patiently with us to the very end of the episode. Did you enjoy Ava?
I did. I have been affiliated with her online for about 10 years to the various tarot-related groups, so it's nice to finally hear her voice.
Oh, wonderful. Yes, she has a wonderful voice. So what's new with you?
Well, I am going full force in my hypnotherapy life coaching practice. And could you guys pull a couple cards on the next couple months with my business?
Pulling them right now. I'm reading from the Aquarian Tarot.
Oh, okay, good. I have that one.
Good, right on. You can visualize along with me. It's fun, like the 70s flair. Okay. We got the Ten of Cups, Four of Pentacles, and then Emperor. So right now, the important thing for you this for the first month is having fun and creating good sort of beginner relationships with clients. How before I get into that, are you still like you're still in the training part right now or?
Oh no.
Okay, good.
I had the training years ago. Yeah, mm-hmm. But now I'm really doing it like full force.
In this version of the Ten of Cups, the young man and young woman are looking at each other very deeply in the eyes. And I guess my question for you, were you hoping to do this mainly online or were you hoping to do in person? I don't know how hypnotherapy would work online, but is that...
Not online. In person or if push ever came to shove, you can
okay.
do it over the phone.
Good. Because it, for me, like... Looking at the card because they're so close to each other, I was going to say it looks like meeting with people and making strong connections right away.
Right.
And in the beginning, it's going to be a lot about relationship building and kind of networking. The Ten of Cups to me is very, very relationshipy. So moving from there to the Four of Pentacles. So like it's going to start out like a little bit light, but then... you're going to establish yourself, and your second card. So the Four of Pentacles and the Emperor, right next to each other. To me, it's about laying claim, like let everyone know right away who you are and what you're out for, and
right.
And be clear and be strong in any marketing that you do. Anything you say about yourself as a brand, having good boundaries about what you do and what you don't do.
Okay.
But it's like ending with the Emperor is a good thing for business. What do you get, Hi-C?
Well, what I did is I just pulled cards for May, June, July, since you asked about the next couple of months. And, you know, for May, I got the the Six of Swords reversed, which in some ways there's a sense of the swords falling away. So things that had been stressing us, that had been concerns, that had been a bit challenging, especially things that might have carried over from the past, just the sense of not something new, but things that still seem to be lingering. The swords falling away is a sense that they're starting to dissipate or fall away. So it seems as if this is a nice transition month because Six of Swords upright is often about moving from one side of something to another, and the reversal can indicate that we may have already arrived at the other side. So we're nearing the end of the journey from where we were to where we want to go, and therefore we can just start focusing on where we are and where we're moving towards rather than dealing with things from behind or from the past. And then the Prince of Wands, which will be the same as the Knight of Wands, reversed. I'm using the Shining Tribe deck. Not the Shining Tribe deck. That's Rachel Pollack's deck. The Cosmic Tribe deck. And the Prince of Wands reversed would say that June, you don't want to move too quickly or try to rush things along. So ease into things, take your time getting things going, kind of revving them up rather than shooting them out of the gate. And think of Prince of Wands as very intense. And so you reverse it and you want to lessen the intensity. It's kind of like turning the heat down on the stove from full to simmer. And that's a very important thing to do when you're cooking something. You can't just let it boil the whole time. So you turn it down to simmer in order for it to really kind of complete its process, to fully infuse the flavors and that kind of thing. So use June as kind of a simmering point to allow things to start to kind of coalesce, rather than trying to do too much too quickly, or pushing yourself too much. Which would mean making time for you to stop, relax, recharge, rather than burning the candle at both ends and causing yourself to be exhausted. And then for July, the reversed Princess of Swords, which would be the same as the Page of Swords reversed. And that actually, to me, the reversal is nice because upright, it can be a card of ADD, where we get distracted by things, or we're scattered just because, ooh, this will be good to do. Oh, maybe I should try this. Oh, maybe I should incorporate this. Oh, this might be a good thing to do. And the reversal of it indicates getting more focused and getting more serious. So there's a sense that July, either you will feel that you have greater focus and clarity around how you want to take your practice or what you want to focus it on, or that's a month to really start putting your emphasis on how do I want to focus my practice, so that it's not trying to be 17 different things to everybody versus it has a very clear sense of what it is and what it offers. And, you know, reversing the princess and the prince, there's a sense of growing up over the next couple of months. So that it's like your practice is starting to go through puberty and is going to be moving into its next stage or its next phase, into its adolescent phase, but actually moving out of adolescence, even with the Prince of Wands reversed. So it's starting to hit its young adulthood.
Okay.
And it's like getting out of college. So now you have to start getting a bit more serious, a bit more focused on where am I going, what am I doing with this, rather than something that I'm just going through phases of.
That makes sense. Okay, thank you.
Good luck to you, my dear.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling in. It's nice to hear. It's nice to hear check-ins from people.
Exactly. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Enjoy the evening.
Sure will.
And we'll just go right on to our next caller, who is calling from area code 727. Are you there, area code 727?
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, hello and welcome to the show. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Lisa from Florida.
Well, welcome. What is it that we can look at for you today?
Yeah, I wanted you to look at my finances, and that's what I wanted the cards to tell me.
Shuffling.
One thing I would say from our card, our goddess that came up in the previous segment, is during this month, pay attention to things that may be bubbling up to the surface or kind of just underneath the surface, because there may be insight or information or opportunity there that it's like when there's a fish underneath the water, but if we're not paying attention, we don't see it. But if we take the time to stop and look at the water, then we'll see the fish underneath the surface. So don't just look at the surface during this month. Look a little bit deeper and you will probably see some information or aspects that you need regarding your finances.
Okay.
Do you have some cards that have come up, Charlie?
So yes, we've got, it's funny, the Emperor just keeps coming up tonight, but we have the King of Pentacles, the Emperor, and the Three of Cups as a past, present, future. And then I pulled a fourth card. It's like, what do I do right now? So the King of Pentacles is interesting in a finances reading. It's someone trying to give advice about finances, like a different person who's sort of successful in their own right and is kind of trying to impart wisdom. They can be a bit pushy, though. Before I go any further, Does that sound like anyone in your life right now, or am I going down the wrong path with that card?
I know who that card is. That's my dad.
Okay. He's a very fatherly figure. So King of Pentacles, they're very cautious. So Pentacles, the suit of Earth, they're very, and they've been successful because they take this slow approach, and they can be a bit of perfectionists, and they can be very judgy about money. And what's interesting is the Emperor comes after him, which represents a little bit of taking on your dad's advice, if he's giving it. It might seem like too restrictive or too much or too impossible right now. Like, it'd be easy for him to say but not to do. But the Emperor is definitely a card of restrictions and rules and being really rigid about certain things financially. My advice with him showing up is that things for a few months at least looks like you need to be very, very, very careful and very, again, that word restriction. But the good news is that the outcome, eventually the Three of Cups, which is celebrating and partying and having drinks with your friends and harvesting. A lot of times the image of the Three of Cups has harvest fruits in it, which represents that, like, these aren't just horrible times that you look back on and think, oh God, that was just absolutely awful and got worse and worse. Like, these hard times will create a bountiful harvest. So having a lean a lean couple of months will pay off in the long run in the fall. So summer might not get to be as I don't know. And the last card I want to tell you about is that the card I pulled for, like, what do you do right now? And that's the Chariot. Which the Chariot is all about taking control of the situation. So financially, literally making sure that you're in control and in ownership of where all the money is going and other people aren't leaking money from you or absorbing money, or does it make sense a little bit?
Yeah.
And the Chariot also is to go forward and to move forward with some plans that you've been making financially, things that you've been in a financial reading, the Chariot can often represent, okay, enough of the planning. It's time to put this into action. Is there anything you've been trying to put into action that would actually coincide with the sort of restrictiveness and carefulness of the Emperor?
Well, I'm supposed to get, like, an inheritance pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
And so once I get that, I plan on, like, relocating, like, moving
yep.
to another house and, you know, things like that. But right now, you know, I'm okay. I'm comfortable, but I'm not, mm-hmm. like, ready for that kind of change in my life. But
So the Chariot does often mean a move. The Chariot, because it's, imagine, it's, you know, going forward. You're in the vehicle. You're leaving the scene here. So that... the emphasis for the move would be on giving yourself a new foundation. We think of the Emperor and moving into that Three of Cups. It's sort of building a new sort of platform for you to do what you really want to do. But what about you, Heisi? What'd you get?
So wait. That was awesome because you're saying that you feel like summer will be lean, but the November time, September, October, November is going
to
be the...
Yeah, the fall. I try to, when I do this particular spread, I'm looking at about 3 months because I really feel like anything beyond that, it's like, what's the point? So, yeah.
Sure.
So there's a lot of male stern figures in this card. They're all sort of looking directly at the viewer, and they all are very intense. So this period looks like it's going to be very intense, but then the odd man out or the odd woman out in the spread is the Three of Cups, where it's very light and happy. Does that timing seem to coincide for you?
Yeah, and I've had other readings that people were saying that they felt like my inheritance was going to be here in like around September.
Yeah, it would be about 3 months, so... That looks like that is when you're going to get to begin to enjoy that.
Right, because I want to move and I want to buy another house and sell this house. And you know, there's a few things I have on the horizon, and I've been trying to, like, well, I've been on a weight loss journey. I've already lost a pretty good amount of weight and, you know, fitness, working out. So I liked it when you said it will be a lean summer. That's what
really?
I'm hoping for.
Yeah, the Emperor would be an amazing workout coach because he can be severe. It's not the Empress saying, like, oh, darling, don't you worry. You tried your best. You know, the Emperor's like, give me 20 more push-ups, you know?
Oh, yeah, my trainers. Well, I have a trainer that trains a group of people. He's so handsome. Wow, he's really good looking.
So I'll talk about some of the cards that came up for me as well.
Okay.
You know, and there's a lot here. On the one hand, I think that there's some things that certainly reiterate what Charlie has already said, because I have a lot of fire coming up, but it's a lot of late fire, meaning the Ten of Wands, the King of Wands. And so late fire would be end of summer. So it seems as if you start to feel like or start to see the burden beginning to lessen or release around the end of summer.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah, sure.
Part of the burden that's on me right now is that, you know, I'm fine on finance. I'm like freaking out or anything, but this is more like this burden that I had. I just broke up with somebody like in around the holidays, like Christmas. And I have really been struggling with the, you know, like even though I broke it off, like I felt like I cut off my own arm. And it's been really hard for me to like cope with what I did, even though I kind of think I needed to do it. And I've doubted my decision a lot. And I've thought about, you know, what if he comes back and maybe I want him, maybe I don't, and will he be better? And I mean, I have literally driven myself to an insane level for like since January. I'm embarrassed to say that, but you know, you can't control your feelings. You have feelings and you do the best you can, but when you have a feeling for somebody, you know what I mean?
I do. And I just pulled a card about that. You mentioned that relationship just because you said it was something that was worrying you. And I got the Six of Rods, which just like the Chariot is absolutely a card of moving forward and moving on. So
yeah,
definitely that relationship not coming back. And the Sixes, Mary Greer once pointed out, the Sixes always show unequal relationships. And one of the big problems this card would suggest would be an unequal relationship where things weren't on the level and you've moved on from that and up, and that hurts, but
I really haven't moved on. I really haven't 100% moved on.
I mean, like you, in the relationship, you've left the relationship rather than emotion. You haven't emotionally gotten past that, and that will...
No, I haven't.
That will come in time, but it's better that you're out of that, according to at least my deck, so...
But that's part of the heaviness that's been on me. I don't think, like, yeah, I mean, it's kind of tight financially, but I'm fine. I'm in a safe zone. It's not a big deal. But really the struggle I've been going through is that relationship has been, it was hurtful, you know, and I'm still healing from it, like a deep wound, and, really
I think this,
struggling.
But I think that this may speak to also why making a move may end up being a good thing for you, because it allows you to start literally moving on with your life and focusing on someplace new, being in someplace new, establishing yourself someplace new, which also means you can reinvent yourself as you get to know new people.
Yeah.
And you are able to better shed the past and starts to put it behind you rather than to feel like it's always, you know, in your face every time you turn around. And there's a lot of, from what I've got with the cards here, that show you're on kind of the verge of a new beginning, of a new phase of life. You know, the Magician card comes in, which is the beginning of the Major Arcana, so it's the beginning of a major phase or cycle. But the key to the Magician card is having a vision for what you want to see come about in your life. So you don't just wait for things to happen versus you visualize what it is that you would want your life to look like. What do you want the future to look like? What do you want the place that you live to look like? Whatever it is. And the King of Wands is here. And so there's a sense that often represents being like the creator of your own destiny. So one, because I initially pulled these cards, obviously, from the question around finances. So there seems to be a lot happening towards the end of summer that is going to put you in a better position to become a creator of your own destiny, to take greater charge and have greater ability to pursue your goals, to manifest your visions, and kind of create for yourself what it is that you're wanting or seeking. The Seven of Wands comes up reversed, and that reversal can indicate that the thing that will get in your way, and I think this speaks to the relationship aspect somewhat as well, but it can also be about the father, it can be about all sorts of stuff because of the king. But Seven of Wands reversed is letting people walk over you, is not having the courage to stand up for what you believe in or to stand up for yourself, to not be intimidated, and to not back down when someone challenges you. So that's going to be very key over the next few months, is to stand up for yourself, to have the courage of your convictions, to believe in yourself, and to know that you can create your own future. You can create the kind of future and life that you want. And even though you may have had to let go of a relationship, it doesn't mean it's the end of all relationships for you, but that you can now move forward to create a new life, probably in a new place, where you can then connect with new relationships. And the final card that came up, well, traditionally it would be called the Judgment card, but in the deck I'm using, it's called Emergence. And so that shows us that you're moving towards emerging or coming up and out of whatever it is that you're feeling overwhelmed by, stuck in, burdened by. And it also shows, I think, with the finances, that something is kind of happening over the summer that's going to give you the ability to rise out of your current situation and into something new. And whether that means, you know, that you have no money and you will have money, or that you're okay with money now, the emergence could be that you're able to rise out of the emotional place that you're in order to make a move and start over and that kind of thing. And the other reiteration that I think it's doing for what Charlie had, traditionally, the Judgment card is correlated to Pluto, and Pluto is the ruler of Scorpio. So this would indicate that the time of emergence, the ability to start to rise up and out of where we're at into something new, will probably start really coming into being or starting to happen around the time of Scorpio, which is October 20th to November 20th. So that seems to be a very key time for when whatever is happening really falls into place and gives you the ability to rise up and out. Now, let's also look at the fact that it's the Judgment card, which means you have to exercise good judgment and good discernment and make wise decisions and well-informed decisions. So, you know, that also is going to play a part in how much you're able to rise up out of your current situation and be able to move forward and start to create something new for yourself.
Okay, that's awesome. I just, you know what I've been struggling with a lot is just that I still love him, and, you know, it just didn't feel like when I communicated my needs to him, he kind of shut down and, like, put a big wall up, and that really hurt, you know what I mean? Like,
right. Loving someone doesn't mean that they're the right person for us to be in relationship with. And, you know, since you keep bringing up the relationship thing, I went ahead and pulled a card specifically around that the way Charlie did. And the Five of Discs, or the Five of Pentacles, came up reversed. Five of Pentacles is a card of codependency.
Yeah.
And the reversal of it says, it's, you know, enough of misery loves company. We've recognized there's a problem, and now it's time for us to do something about it or to walk away from it rather than to stay mired in it.
I agree. You know, what's funny about that is, like, he's actually in a codependent relationship with someone in his family.
And that's not something that you need to get dragged into.
That's why I spoke about it, and I walked away, and I said, you know, this is unacceptable, and I broke it off.
But I think what this also does is, you know, as your finances progress,
yeah,
this means that you don't have someone that could end up negatively impacting the benefit that those finances can have for you, because either you would be deciding to use some of those finances for somebody else rather than for yourself, or somebody would be coercing or manipulating you into using finances in a not so good way, let us say. So this is all kind of supporting you in that you've made the right decision.
Yeah.
It's what's going to allow you to be able to move forward and especially pay attention to what starts to happen around the end of summer. And then, again, I would probably say that you'll have a very clear sense of what you can do or what you will have, or, you know, that now's the time to move or whatever around that Scorpio time frame, around that October, November time frame. So things are getting ready to happen with all the fire coming up here. For me, fires are very quick. So in the next few months, things are really starting to shift and change. And, we want you to take full advantage of that rather than to not take advantage of it or have somebody else taking advantage of what should be something that you're taking advantage of, because you keep them in your life.
Right. I know. It's just, know what I thought? I thought that when I ended this, that it would just be so easy. I was like, see ya, we'll slam the door and move. You know what I mean? Emotionally, like, it was going to be quick for me. Like, whoop, I'm done. But that's not what happened. And it was kind of shocking even for myself. I was like, wow.
Well, and that this may also be what's being indicated here, is that by the end of the summer, that's how you will finally feel. That you are past this, that you have moved past, you know, that you're able to move on and start looking forward rather than to feel like you're still struggling with the past.
Yeah, it's just painful because I just can't believe. You know how, like, if you've been, like, with somebody or whatever, and you just can't believe their perspective on life, you can't wrap your head around it. You know what I mean?
Well, it's good that you've realized that you don't have the same perspective as the other person that you were in a relationship with sooner rather than later, so that you don't find yourself 20 years into a relationship and then trying to get out of it. So it's not that it makes it easier at this point. It's just that 20 years down the line could be much more difficult.
You know what? You're so right. Like, it's a gift that, you know, we were only together about, I know you're going to laugh, but we were really only together about 2-3 months. That was it. And the attachment I formed with him was, like, immediate. It felt like I was married to him, like, a minute I met him. It was crazy, like, strong connection. You know, like, I haven't had a connection like that in 10 years. And I was like, whoa. And I thought this was the guy that I was supposed to be with. And I hadn't felt like that in years and years and years. And then it was so weird because I was like, oh, my God, am I in the twilight zone? Like, you really are making these decisions for your own life? Like, I couldn't believe it. You know what I mean? I just couldn't.
Right. Well, fortunately, you took the right steps. By the end of the summer, you'll feel like you can put this behind you and you're ready to move forward. And then around that October, November timeframe, there seems to be a lot happening for you to start moving up, moving on, and creating a new destiny and future for yourself. So it's a very exciting time.
A new butt, too.
A new what?
A new butt.
A new butt? Well,
I'm working out. I'm working out a lot. I'm hoping to create a lot of new things. You know, a lot of squats.
Well, that might just need to be part of the vision you're having for what destiny you want to create for yourself in the near future. So We'll keep your butt in mind.
Yeah. We're going to all visualize it being, like, lifted and, you know, like, nice.
I'm holding that vision for you. There we go. Well, right on. Hope we were of help.
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for your patience and thanks for calling in.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, Charlie, there it is. Yet another amethyst oracle.
Where do they go?
Sent out to the universe.
Right on. It's been a pleasure. I loved a chance to speak with Ava, and I posted on our Facebook page a link to her site should you want a reading from the magical and spirited Ava Yacintois.
And we hope that you will join us next month. Second Tuesday of each month is when the Amethyst Oracle airs. So we will be back with you in June, and that will be on June 11th. So come back, find out once again what the oracles have to say to you, and Charlie and I will look forward to conversing with you once again.
Right on. Have a great month, I see.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye.
The Amethyst Oracle.
Divination with a queer twist.
Divination with a queer twist.
The Amethyst Oracle.
The Amethyst Oracle was brought to you by Firefly Willows LIVE.